Today, here on Cincy Business Talk with Mike Roth, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer, we'll be talking to business leaders about how they have grown their businesses and people. We discuss new strategies, tactics, and philosophies which lead to positive growth in our marketplace. Our program is sponsored by Sandler Training by Roth & Associates. Each week, we'll talk with our best Cincinnati area top executives about their tools and insights. Our regular listeners will be given the edge that will help them win in a competitive environment which we live. Simple solutions to complex problems which challenge all of us are rarely correct. We will address complex problems or opportunities with appropriate solutions. If you have questions or comments, contact Mike at mikeroth@rothconsulting.net or call Mike at 513-753-9400. Now your host, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer, Mike Roth.
Thanks, Scott. I'm here with Wolf Olson of Freelance Divers. Thanks for joining us today, Wolf.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Good. Before we get into the show, I figured I'd tell our listeners about some of the things that we have coming up. First, four Mondays in January, we have a four-week networking program running from 8 to 10 a.m. If you call in, speak to Carmen on 753-9400, extension 102. Tell her you heard about it on the radio show. You'll get an immediate $50 discount. It's only a $200 cost, but it will dramatically improve your networking in 2013. Sandler Client Summit coming up February 14th and 15th in Orlando, Florida. Great place for diving.
Great place.
Probably a lot of tourists drop things into the Disney water. And that's the second client summit. The subtitle is No Guts, No Gain. It's going to be How to Get Stronger in Sales. We're going to have an outside speaker, one of the first times ever. The speaker will be Brian Frank. He's the head of global sales operations for a little outfit called LinkedIn. If you're selling business to business and you're not on LinkedIn, let me suggest that you be there. And during the conference, you'll learn how LinkedIn is using their own services to grow their brand and their market penetration. The client, the conference is February 14th and 15th at the Buena Vista Palace Hotel and Spa. It's right across the street from downtown Disney. Be great networking, some great sales training. There'll be a separate sales training track for clients and a separate management track for clients. One of the big things featured was going to be a full discussion of the new Sandler certification program. You guys in diving, you have certification programs, don't you, Wolf?
Just a few.
Just a few means?
Most of my divers are either military trained or commercial dive school graduates.
So after a guy has dived in the military or commercial school, do they have to keep their certifications up to date?
Yes, they do.
Additional training?
Some of it's OJT, some of it's BWC-driven, but we always have training sessions on board in the company at least once every quarter.
We have a rule. We don't like to use abbreviations, buzzwords that other people don't know, so we explain them and then we use them. So you said BWC.
Bureau of Workers' Compensation.
Right. Yeah, I guess you have a pretty great rating as a diving company.
Yes, we do.
Okay. Let's see. What else is coming up? At the end of January, we have a cold call camp. Those people who make a lot of cold calls, that's all day. It's going to be January 30th. You'll learn how to get by the gatekeeper, how to build 3 scripts for your contacts, and 5 ways to have at least 70% of your prospects call you back within 8 business hours. And that really works if you use it. Okay. So, Wolf, why don't you tell us what your background is that got you into the diving business, in your own words?
Well, in 1971, the draft was in full effect. I was chosen number 3, and my father was a 32-year Army veteran. And he knew I was going to go into the medical field, and I wasn't going to get through college in time for that, so he said that I should start with the Navy corpsmen, because they were the best corpsmen he'd ever seen in his military medical career. So we started with the Navy, and in 72, Navy trained me how to dive, and it's been uphill ever since.
That's interesting. So you went into the Navy not knowing you were going to be a diver, thinking you were going to be a corpsman?
Right. Well, corpsman, we go with the teams that we work with, shipboard, undoing lines from the props. Navy's got one of the premier worldwide training facilities in their stations around the world. You're taught that the ocean is your friend, your confidant, your provider, and your best friend when you need it.
So you spent a few years in the Navy?
8 total, yes.
8 total. And when you got out of the Navy, is that when you started freelance life?
I think I banged around like every young man, about 21 different jobs before I landed on something I really enjoyed to do. It was always a challenge. Always challenging your brain process, if you will. Thinking through problems, making them go away, making the situation work for you, and fixing things underwater.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you actually grow up here in the Cincinnati area?
No, I was an Army brat. I was adopted from Germany and was an Army brat for 18 years, so we traveled around a lot.
All over the world?
All over the world.
Gee.
Mostly dry land, and then the Navy set me on the shoreline.
Mm-hmm. Do you speak any foreign languages?
A little bit of German, a little bit of Vietnamese.
Okay, that's a strange combo. I can say que pasa. What brought you to Cincinnati?
It was a familiar territory. I went to college after high school for about 2 semesters and didn't fare well, so it was the military.
Okay. And after the military, you came back to Cincinnati?
Yeah, it was familiar turf, and mm-hmm. there was more opportunity here than there was in my then hometown of Greenville, Ohio. Not a lot of water in Greenville.
I'm not even sure if I know where Greenville, Ohio is. Where is that?
Northwest of Dayton, about 50 miles.
Oh, okay.
The farming community.
Okay, not much water.
Not much.
So how many years ago was it that you created this company, Freelance Diving?
Worked for a very nice commercial diving company for about 12 years. And in 1999, I incepted Freelance Commercial Diving and started with myself and 2 other divers.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved along from there.
Okay. And you're based in what part of the city? Not that it matters much.
Yeah, well, I live in Goshen. And we respond to places anywhere they pay us to go.
Okay. So most of your work has been in the Cincinnati metro marketplace?
90% of it.
Uh-huh.
90%.
How far afield have you gotten in the business recently?
Florida, Lake of the Ozarks in Missouri, St. Lawrence Seaway, and off the coast of South Carolina.
Wow, so that's pretty far afield. What causes people in those places that are really far from Cincinnati to reach out and hire freelance diving?
They've got a problem they need solved, and either they're not happy with the local divers or they're not as experienced. We have a lot of pictures on our website that shows a broad variety of what we do. And a lot of those pictures explain that we can probably handle the customer situation in a professional and timely manner, which includes the travel time and the hotel time, stuff like that. Getting there, getting set up, getting there relaxed and ready to go, fresh and ready to go.
Mm-hmm. So how many people do you have in your team right now?
We have 4 full-time and 2 part-time, and we can draw upon a large volume of prospective divers to okay. meet our qualifications.
Okay. And what kind of qualifications do you have?
Myself personally?
Yeah. If a diver wanted to work for you in freelance diving because they love being in the water.
The dive log with more than 25 hours logged underwater, and a safety resume, probably first aid training, some kind of welding experience underwater. Confidence in himself. And show confidence in himself.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Why welding? I wouldn't have thought of that.
Well, joining pipes together, welding, cutting off steel protrusions into the maritime waterways, cutting up bridges underwater, just about anything they need us to do. We take basically all the skilled trades of the construction trades and adapt them for us to use underwater. I've even painted underwater, so it's not unusual.
Wow, that was a shocker, too. Why would you bother to paint something underwater?
The company wasn't willing to drain their fire suppression system, so we had to find a leak, and it was seeping through a concrete matrix that had to be sealed off, but we couldn't drain it, so we had to paint epoxy underwater to seal up the leaking area.
That really sounds like a sloppy job.
It is.
Okay. Before we take a break, Wolf, if someone wants to talk to you about an underwater project that they have, how should they get in touch with you?
Company phone number 513-722-7997.
Okay. And your website is?
Freelancedivers.com.
Good. And do you want anyone to contact you via email?
It's wolf@freelancedivers.com.
Okay. You probably have a device that works underwater there, so you can...
No, not quite. We've got R&D working on it, though.
Okay, that's good. We're going to take a short commercial break, and then we'll be right back with Wolf Olson.
I'd like to introduce you to Tom Manning and a marketing event that he's going to be offering here in Cincinnati this spring.
This is Mike Roth with Tom Manning. We're talking about your marketing and sales boot camp that you're going to be running in April and May. And the name of the program is?
It's called Engage 2013.
Engage 2013. And you're going to be running it in Columbus and in Cincinnati.
Correct. It's going to be Tuesday mornings for 6 weeks in Columbus and Wednesday mornings for 6 weeks in Cincinnati.
Okay. And if a company sends their CEO, the CEO comes and he's bringing a chief marketing officer, what would they be getting by attending your program?
Well, the first thing we try to do is we try to get the company to develop a story. Figure out what your key messages are, what the value proposition is, and come up with their company story. From that, we can actually look at all your marketing materials to be sure they're telling the same story. All your marketing and sales materials. So does your website match your brochures, match your email campaign, and all of your branding? Does it tell the same message?
Okay. Does it really have to match?
It really does, because what it does is it creates a consistency in the eyes of the end customer or the end user of your products and services.
If you're talking about user or prospect here.
Well, it depends what your industry is. If you're B2C, it's going to be your customers, and it's going to be what your customer sees with your company.
Right.
If you have different messages, you're actually causing customer confusion. If you're B2B, it's going to be you and other businesses, and you're going to be trying to capture market share. And so are you consistent as to what your message is and how you define yourself in the marketplace?
Mm-hmm. And why should someone attend?
So what we'll do is we're going to, over the course of 6 weeks, we're going to help you define your key messages and your company's story. And then from that, we're going to help you develop a marketing strategy and a sales strategy and perhaps a social media strategy that helps coordinate all of that.
So people will be consistent at the end.
Correct. We're going to actually look at everything from your logo and your corporate identity. Does it match that key messages? Your website. Are the messages on your website consistent? Your brochure, your sales presentations, your PowerPoint presentations, your proposal system, your email campaign, your trade show.
And naturally, your selling system.
And, of course, your selling system as well.
Tom, if someone is interested in finding out more, either speaking to you or speaking to you personally, how should they do that?
There's two ways. One, you could go to marketleaders.us. That's the website for Engage 2013. You can learn all about the sessions there and the speakers and the time frame and registration. Or you can call me directly if you have any questions that aren't answered there, and you can reach me at 614-622-1047.
Thanks, Tom. In future weeks, we'll be hearing more from Tom about the Engage Marketing and Sales 2013. Company owners and sales managers, are you sick and tired of hiring a salesperson you think is Tom Cruise only to get Pee Wee Herman on the first day of the job? Call me, Mike Roth, 513-646-6523, to stop this from happening to you again. This is Mike Roth, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer. Many salespeople tell us business was really easy. They likened it to gathering fruit in an orchard full of ripe trees. They gathered the low-hanging fruit. They had to get baskets to pick up the fruit that was already fallen. They never had to climb a tree. They worked this way for 10 or 15 years. Given the strong economy, this was no problem. What are you hearing now? The economy has slowed down. Salespeople are competing on price. There's still business now, but salespeople have to work harder. The fruit has not fallen from the tree, and there's no low-hanging fruit. The fruit is there, but it's higher up in the tree. The problem is, their salespeople have forgotten how to climb. Do your salespeople know how to climb? If you or your team needs to learn how to climb through and up out of tough economic times, call me, Mike Roth, at 513-646-6523, or check our website at rothconsulting.net. This is Mike Roth. I'm back with Wolf Olson of Freelance Divers. We're going to dive right into this. I'm sure people say that all the time to you. Wolf, how do you go to market? How do people find you if they don't accidentally find you on the website?
A lot of it is customer-driven. A friend of a friend has a problem, and they'll talk to their friend. Do you know anybody that does this? And they go, oh, by the way, yeah, we just had a guy come out.
Let's do that a take two, Wolf. How do people that find you?
People find me. Phone books already set up with commercial construction companies know us through our advertising. Angie's List for the homeowner and the Blue Book. We advertise in the construction Blue Book for commercial work and our website.
Mm-hmm. Do people still use the Blue Book?
Yeah, we've had good success. Good success with the Blue Book.
Good. You don't have any outside salespeople then?
Not technically. I think every one of our guys puts on the sales suit every time he goes out in the field, and that's one of his jobs, is to sell a company.
Mm-hmm. Do you get much repeat business?
Yeah, yes, sir. We've got people that consider us part of their family.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think the biggest obstacles you have to growing your business are?
Competition from, for years we dealt with a scuba diver just got his certification this last summer and wants to do the job for a tenth of the price that we charge. And then the customer calls us saying, well, we can have this guy do it for X amount of dollars. And then we come in and say, well, if he gets injured or hurt, is he covered by workman's comp? Does he have liability insurance? Does he know what he's doing? That type of thing. Just because you're a certified scuba diver doesn't mean you're a commercial diver. That's the other side of the coin. Commercial divers work in adverse conditions where scuba divers would probably panic. Not that there's a lot of good scuba divers out there, but the difference between scuba diving and commercial diving is scuba divers pay people a sum of money to take them to the gin clear water, see the pretty fish, coral, and reefs. In commercial diving, you put the human body in a Ziploc baggie and jump into stuff you wouldn't put the toe of your work boot in.
For example?
Sewage treatment plants, stages 1, 2, and 3 sewage, paper mash plants.
Some people don't know what stage 1, 2, and 3 means.
When you flush your toilet, that's stage 1. Stage 2 has been treated through chemicals and aeration. Stage 3 is filtered and treated again before it's returned to the water table.
And you do repair work at stage 1?
And 2 and 3.
Wow. Is there a lot of call for diving in stage 1 and 2?
Well, a lot of the smaller municipalities don't have the ability to pump the waste effluent onto another plant. They are self-contained, and if they start overflowing or leaking into the water system, that becomes an issue with the EPA. We'll be called in between 12 and 5 in the morning when very few people are using the sewage system. And like I said, they don't have the ability to pump off to another station, say, to treat the overflow. whereas we get called in the morning for the smaller ones that, you know, it's just about shut down between 12 and 5 in the morning.
So you guys will work in the late early morning hours to solve those problems?
Yes, sir. 12 to 5 is our prime time frame.
Really? So you're 12 a.m. to 5 a.m. is a prime time?
For that particular industry, yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are you called in by law enforcement frequently?
Occasionally. I've taken courses for the Royal Canadian Mounted Police on evidentiary recovery. We treat the every scene where there's evidence to be recovered or bodies to be found like a crime scene, and very careful as to not disturb anything evidentiary recovery. You have to bring up weapons or evidence of a crime. The police have their own dive teams, and they're very good at what they do. I've worked with them, and I'm on the training cadre for one of them. So, we run into stuff that we turn over to them, and they run into stuff that they're not interested in, and they turn it over to us. So it's kind of a mutual relationship.
So I was kind of curious. Before the show, you told me about an incident where you were called in to recover a what do they call that, two-wheel vehicle?
Segway.
A Segway that had gone into the Ohio River.
Somebody lost control on one of the tours in downtown Cincinnati, and the lady stepped off and it kept on going. So it had a trip to the bottom of the river there by Serpentine Wall, and we were called in to recover it and return it to the center that rented it out.
So it was the Segway center that they called you in?
Yes.
Okay, that's interesting. What's the most interesting dive recovery project that you've been involved with in the last year?
Bringing up a speedboat from one of the local lakes that burst into flames, and the diver and passenger had to bail out. And we had to bring up a 900-pound motor with a bathtub toy attached to it, and it was at 90 feet.
What do you mean a bathtub toy attached to it?
Well, these go-fast boats that people, it's all motor and about a canoe size worth of wood being mm-hmm. pushed by a high-priced, high-powered motor. And we call it a bathtub toy with a jet engine strapped to it.
So how do you get a 900-pound motor up the bottom of a lake?
Well, number one step is to find it. Number two is attach a line to it, and then attach flotation devices and inflate them underwater so it brings it to the surface in a controlled manner.
Mm-hmm. And who would employ you to recover something like that, which is obviously destroyed permanently? Why would you bother?
The boat owner. There's still parts usable on that.
Really, the boat owner wanted it back?
Plus, Parks Department doesn't want the fuel leaking into the water system, oils and such as that, contaminants.
So in that particular case, it was the boat owner and the boat owner's insurance company.
Correct.
That paid the bill to get the boat out of the lake.
Correct.
Must have been expensive.
On the relatively recovery terms, it's in the price range.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how many boats do you recover in a year, or motors?
3 to 4 per year.
Really?
On the average, it can range from a cabin cruiser to a speedboat to a Segway.
That's unusual. Usually Segways aren't terribly water-worthy. They're not made to float.
Correct. They weigh about 110 pounds.
Okay. It probably sank like 110-pound lead weight.
Yes, it did.
Okay. And you were saying that the Segway had batteries that it would explode if they were exposed
to
water?
Yeah, we usually call people that make the product that we're bringing up off the bottom and see if there's any issues with it. And the people that make them said the lithium-ion battery would either explode or burst into flames when it was open. And I said, well, that's nice to know, and I'll pass it along to the people that need to know, but that was not our job description at that point in time.
You were just responsible for getting it
bringing
out
of
the
water.
Water,
out of the river.
Okay. In your market for commercial diving, what are the opportunities and possibilities that you see over the next 1 to 5 years?
Depending on, you know, the construction industry, if business in the construction industry picks up where they have water decorations, fountains, lakes, ponds, Not only do the lakes in front of these large office buildings provide a very pleasant, relaxing scenery, but they also double as a secondary fire suppression system for the fire department. Should there be a fire on the premises, they can throw a pump in and pump water from the pond, the reflection pond.
Mm-hmm.
So the more building we have going on, the more work there is. And there's always the river. We always have Port of Cincinnati, barge traffic, carrying different products up and down the river.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Coal, salt, grain. As long as business is moving, we're moving.
So the barges ever sink in the river?
Oh, yeah, they take on water, and we called in to find the hole and patch it while it's docked at the Port of Cincinnati.
Oh, that happened frequently?
Two, three times a year.
Really? Never thought of that. A barge takes on water and doesn't sink.
They have the new barges are double hulled, and they have sensors stationed along the length of the barge inside that indicates that to the captain's wheelhouse that he's taken on water, and say barge 27 of the 30 barge fleet, and it'll tell just about where to look, and they can send people down into the double hull through watertight compartments and find out where it's leaking, and we have to go in on the outside and affect a patch to keep the water from coming in. Now, they pump it out, but
it's
still coming in.
So are you actually welding a patch on the outside of a barge?
Depending on the condition of the steel of the barge is made from age of the steel, if it's rusty or if it's solid, we can do either whatever the customer would like us to do. We had to find a leak and fix it that was right next to a fuel tank on the inside, so no sparks or welding were allowed. But we did do an epoxy patch and a bolt through. So it depends on what the situation is. We'll adapt.
Good. That's an application for the underwater welding.
Right.
An application for the epoxy, which you use in swimming pools.
Right. Well, it's a little bit different, but still the same chemical. Better living through chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Earlier we were talking about a swimming pool over at one of the health clubs that you worked on. What was the situation there?
Light conduits leaking, shifting of the ground underneath it. Mother Nature's wonderful. She doesn't like things where they are, so man tries to keep her from moving, and she won't cooperate, so things move, and then we come in to fix the problem.
So the underwater lighting electrical conduit was leaking?
Yeah.
Wow, so it sounded like you had to break out a side of the pool to
no,
to find it.
No, we just use epoxy and dye and patience. And sometimes what they call is a hydrostatic valve that keeps the pool from floating out of the ground will actually do its job, and when it slaps back down again, when the water pressurized is in and out of the pool is the same pressure, it'll slap back down and something will get trapped in the hydrostat valve that keeps it open, and we go down and clear that.
I never knew there was such a thing as a valve to prevent the pool from floating out of the ground.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting occasion when that happens.
Yeah, I bet it is. Wolf, we're going to take a short break here, and we'll get right back to you.
Thank you, Mike.
Why do some business owners make lots of money while others endure years of mediocrity? Is it really the economy, the market, the weather, the competition? No. These are all called excuses, which are always plentiful. Hi, I'm Mike Roth, founder of Roth & Associates. I'm the most experienced Sandler sales trainer in Cincinnati. As a business owner or part of a team, are you accepting excuses from your sales team because you make them yourself? Business winners succeed in spite of this trash. Business winners invest in themselves and their people. For over 15 years, we've been coaching, training, and challenging professionals who are 100% committed to long-term sales growth and profitability, no matter what it takes. If you're deadly serious about increasing your sales, call me at 513-646-6523. I'm the most experienced Sandler sales trainer in Cincinnati. To find out how Sandler training can make you better, faster, and stronger, call 513-646-6523.
This is Mike Roth and Wolf Olson. If you have a question for Wolf, he has agreed to answer some questions. The number for calling will be 646-595-4916. Call in during the commercial. We'll be able to, during this next Sandler Rule, we'll be able to handle it when you the Sandler Rule is finished.
Hi, I'm Rich Isaac from Sandler Training, and I'm here to talk about rule number 15. The best presentation you ever give is the one the prospect will never see. Now let's start by talking about the fact that that rule should not be taken literally. Of course, there's an appropriate time to talk about your products, your services, your solutions, your prices. What happens is that most salespeople simply talk about it too soon. The prospective client will say things to them like, "Show me what you have. Tell me what you can do." And the salesperson, eager to show their credibility and to show their product knowledge, will go into presentation mode. And there's two problems with that. Number one, it's too early to make a presentation because the salesperson isn't knowledgeable enough about the particular situation the prospective client is facing. And second of all, it comes off like a sales pitch. And if there's one thing that prospective clients can't stand, it's someone making a pitch at them trying to convince them. Is there a better way? A better way to show your knowledge and build credibility with a prospective client? Actually, there are two ways. First is you can learn to ask better questions, more insightful questions. And second, you can learn to tell stories, meaningful stories that the prospective client will be able to relate to. Let me give you an example. Let's assume that I sell software to help companies run their warehouses more effectively. I might say, "Sam, as the Vice President of Operations, I'm wondering if you ever run into these issues. A lot of people tell me that they have a real balancing act between reducing their inventory expense and still being able to handle just-in-time delivery. It's really challenging for them. Others tell me that they have a difficult time getting their staffs to follow the procedures in their warehouse as exactly and effectively as they could. Now, before I go on, I'm wondering if you can relate to either of those two things." Now, what did I just accomplish? Through simply telling a story and asking a simple question, I was able to show my credibility, show my knowledge, show my understanding of their business. In essence, I presented information in such a way that they got those things without me coming off like a salesperson making a pitch. Remember, if you want to really be the most credible professional salesperson, learn to tell better stories and ask better questions. Remember, if you get good at both of those things, the best presentation you ever give is the one the prospect will never see.
Okay, this is Mike Roth. I'm back with Wolf Olson. Again, if you want to call in and ask Wolf a question, the number is 646-595-4916. Wolf, what percentage do you think of your business is coming from your website?
Probably 25-30%.
That's a big percentage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when was the last time you guys updated your website?
We sit in new pictures all the time. The basic premise of it is still the same. You know, you can't take pictures of a guy underwater in water you can't see in. So the results, the diver going in and the diver coming out are about all we got. And, you know, the retrieval of the objects that we bring up.
It would be really cool if you had a picture of you holding a Segway coming out of the water.
There we go.
Okay. In running your business, you've run the business, what, for 8 years now?
Yeah, since 99.
Okay, that's like 13 years. We have a thesis of operation and business that simple solutions to complex problems are invariably wrong. Therefore, if you have a complex problem, you need a complex solution. Maybe you could share with our listeners a complex problem that you ran into that you used a complex solution to solve. Might be transferable logically to another industry.
Or complex problem with a simple solution.
That actually worked, that would be a rarity.
We just had one. We had to plug off a large drain system for a swimming pool. The plumbing was below grade of the pool, and we used, the client wanted us to use inflatable plugs to plug off the situation, plug off the pipes. Well, the inside of the pipe was such that it looked like the inside of a really bad cave. Lots of sharp stalactites and corrosion metal,
And we inflated the plugs and they blew out because they punctured the inflatable plugs. So you couldn't put a solid plug in there. So we got some brand new plugs, inflated them, and stuffed rags around where the water was still being taken around. Because you're inflating this plug and hoping it doesn't blow while there's people down below working in, you know, a wet environment with power tools. You don't want the whole pool dumping down in their lap. So we try to keep, you know, inflate the plugs to a point where we're sure they're not going to blow out and cause problems down below grade, out of sight, out of mind, but we have radio communication.
So is this an older pool?
Older plumbing in the swimming pool.
I never thought about stalactites and stalagmites and plumbing.
The corrosion, you know, pointed in towards the pipe, and it was sharp and corroded and caused an issue with the inflatable plugs.
Mm-hmm. So you
stuck rags in there, T-shirts from the lost and found, and stopped the water flow enough for them to affect their repairs down below grade.
Okay. That was pretty innovative. Perhaps you can, you've got, over the years that you've held the company, approximately how many either full-time or part-time people have you had working for you?
Depending on the job, we can fluff out our staff to, we've had 8 before on one job that required 24-hour coverage. And we can, during the summer months when the pool season's up, we can do 4 full-time people, 4 to 6 full-time people, and it ebbs and flows with the demand.
Mm-hmm. So over the years, it sounds like you've had more than 50 people working for you over the years.
Yeah, they do come and go. I mean, I'm not the end-all job, but for people living here and wanting to do what we do, you know, there's always people that want to go offshore and make their mark in the offshore market and you know, expand their dive log, so to speak. I'm pushing 60 this year, and I've seen just about, you know, I'm not the smartest in the world, but I've learned to figure things out, improvise, adapt, and overcome, if you will. And old age and treachery will outdo youth and cunning every time.
So I always ask people, leaders like yourself, for a leadership tip that other CEOs could use.
Always work hard. Always be on call.
Let's take that again into the microphone this time.
Okay. Always have a plan. Always work hard. And always maintain control.
Okay. That's pretty good.
And there's only 2 mistakes. Not going all the way and not starting.
Not starting is one of those things that really hurts sales.
Yeah.
People in business
the
development.
The fear of cold calling or the fear of somebody rejecting you is just really hard for some people to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have to deal with that?
Well, rejection?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But you don't let it rule your life, you know?
Oh. Well, I'll give you a free Sandler tip. Since Sandler's a sponsor. Free tip is reject them first.
There you go.
So you probably don't want this job done professionally.
The sour grapes theory.
You can look at it that way. Yeah. But negative reverse logic tends to work and keep your self-esteem intact. That's probably the most important thing you need to come away with in every selling situation.
Right. We can present the problems like what would happen if this person that's less qualified than me gets the job.
Mm-hmm.
What would happen if something, you know, all bets are off, something goes bad wrong, and the family of the survivors end up owning your company?
How would that make you feel?
How would that make you feel? So you turn it around.
Yeah. So in your world, since a lot of people haven't been there, give us an idea of some of the stuff that can go wrong or has gone wrong for other people, not your company.
Right. Well, there's about a dozen divers that die a year around the world, commercial divers in current takes them away, snaps the umbilical, large predatory fish, sharks.
So are you guys working with umbilical cords or with scuba
tanks?
Yes,
all umbilical. Scuba we use occasionally if it's shallow, close to shore, all within the ADC and Association of Diving Contractors realm and the OSHA guidelines and the U.S. Navy guidelines, of course.
So, but most of the time...
Most of it's commercial. The helmet has communication, continuous airflow. We have three redundant backup, bailout air systems. If the compressor should throw a rod, we've got the volume tank. And at that point in time, we're bringing the diver out. If it takes a while for him to get back, we've got a HP backup system.
HP means not Hewlett Packard.
High pressure backup system.
I think of Hewlett Packard.
Backup tank. And then there's also a bailout tank on the diver's back that he carries with him that, you know, is a redundant, third time redundant system should anything go wrong. But if we get to the point where he's had to use the tank on his back, the surface support crew is not doing their job. So our goal is to bring everybody in to do the job and bring them all away safely with all their fingers and toes and lives intact.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever had to use that third backup system?
I had to use it once for another company, but that was an inexperienced tender working on the compressor. It's mm-hmm. the only time I've ever had to use that. None of our guys have had to use that since I started my company.
Mm-hmm. So how many pounds of air pressure are you pumping down the umbilical cord?
About 165.
165 pounds? And how deep can your divers go?
On air, if we're working above the 33-foot mark, we can pretty much stay all day until one of us gets cold or tired.
Mm-hmm.
After that, it progressively gets, you work with the dive tables, nitrogen tables, and how deep you go and how long you can stay depends on what we see on the card. And topside is in charge of that. Diver down below has got his hands full and mind full of what he's doing, paying attention to what he's doing. The topside is there to make sure that we have the diver in control and don't let him stay there any longer than he has to.
How does the guy on top know how deep the diver actually is?
We have what's called a pneumofathometer on the...
Great name.
Spell that three times fast. The pneumofathometer, we set a column of air down to the diver. When the diver sees air bubbles coming out of the hose, the diver responds that he has air coming out of his pneumofathometer hose, and then we shut off a valve at the top side on the air panel, and the needle will return to where the depth the diver is. And that way we have a confirmed depth of the diver.
So you have a confirmed depth despite the amount of umbilical cord that you may have let out to get
it. Right. It doesn't measure horizontal. It measures vertical water column.
So you may have 300 feet of umbilical out, and he only may be down 100.
Maybe down 40 feet, 40, 50 feet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
have you guys ever worked on recovering a sunken treasure?
Not yet, but we're delving into that this year.
Is there a sunken treasure in the Ohio River?
Well, there's always something to be found of all the shipping trades. The Ohio River's been a trade path, trademark pathway for goods and people up and down the river since this area was settled, and the Indians even used it for transporting their canoes and, you know, traveling market-wise. The settlers came in here with their flatboats, and not a whole lot of treasure, but historical artifacts mainly.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole lot of treasure, pirates on the river. But, you know, the gambling...
I would imagine that there's a lot of silt in the Ohio River that would bury something from the 1700s.
Oh, yeah, and finding that is always an issue. Magnetometers, cesium magnetometers, people that, you know, equipment that reads the bottom of the river.
So you help me out here. I can understand this magnetometer looks for iron and steel. What's this cesium thing?
Well, it's just another form of... higher tech, towed behind the boat, and it maps out the bottom and tells you whether you have a magnetic anomaly. There are devices out there that can find non-ferrous metals like gold and silver. That's available. But the cesium magnetometer and the magnetometers at large usually do just magnetic anomalies in the Earth's crust, i.e. the river bottom. And you'll be able to find a metal hull or metal framework, cables, metal fids, rope pulleys, stuff like that were made of early iron show up on a high resolution on magnetometers.
So are you going to be going after some of this stuff this summer?
Not necessarily the historical artifacts. We come across them occasionally when we dredge around outfalls for power companies and stuff like that. When we dredge around barges to get more bottom depth, we'll come across a key, a padlock from the old days. Just historical artifacts that are neat to find. Nothing really big. We'd like to start on finding some treasure offshore. We're working on that now with another company.
You mean going
offshore?
Offshore in Florida or Texas?
Overseas.
Overseas?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that something you're going to do in the foreseeable future?
Yeah, within about the next 2 years.
Okay.
Delve into the pirate trove treasure.
It's interesting to me to figure out who actually owns the pirate trove treasure if you dredge up a pirate ship off the coast of Florida.
No, everybody's got their fingers in it. Everybody knows the Mel Fisher story.
Yeah.
You know, he spent 30 years of his life looking, lost his son and daughter-in-law, and the boat capsizing, and then Florida tried to maintain their control over it. And the federal people stepped in and said, he offered you 25%, and you want to take 75%. So there's a lot of, you know, politics that goes on. Greed is a major play factor in treasure hunting. And trying to find people in governments that aren't greedy is difficult.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you're going to be treasure hunting in non-U.S. waters.
Could be. I don't know yet.
Okay. No one. You don't want anyone following you. Okay.
We'll see how that goes when we leave.
Okay. Is that going to be the first time that you've been involved in quotation marks treasure hunting?
Oh, no. I've signed on. Any young man would, you know, the dream of a lifetime. Somebody offered me the chance to go up to off the shore of South Carolina and look for some of the merchant ships that sank in the hurricanes off the shore, and ended up with a couple of cannonballs and a couple of pig iron ingots from England. Other and a couple jars of olives that nobody could eat because they had lead caps on them. So, it's always a difference. It always, you know, months, years, weeks of abject boredom with peppered by moments of extreme adrenaline rush and excitement that brings you, you know, that adrenaline rush. That's all we all go for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now you're doing the more mundane stuff that pays the bills.
Well, I used to get spanked for getting this muddy and wet when I was a kid. Now I get paid for it, so I figure childhood's come full circle, and I'm just a grown, gray-haired kid.
Okay, that's
enjoying
great.
Enjoying my job. I love my job. I love getting wet.
Good. We're going to take a short one-minute break. This is the last chance you'll have to call in and ask Wolf a question, 646-595-4916.
Hi, I'm Eric Meyer with Sandler Training, here to talk about Rule 44. If your foot hurts, you're probably standing on your own toe. Here's an example. You go through your proposal with a prospect. Everything looks great. Your prospect is responding in a positive fashion to the information that you brought to the table. Everyone feels good. You wrap up and move forward for the order, only to find that the prospect says that they have to take your information to a committee. Now, at this point, you can get angry with the prospect. Why didn't they bring that up? Why didn't they tell you that they were going to have to take this information to somebody else before they could make a decision? Well, it's your job to ask the right questions to uncover roadblocks and potential problems ahead of time so that you don't find yourself scrambling at a future date when it's already too late. So take responsibility when the prospect brings up new problems and challenges. If you ask the right questions ahead of time, you can diffuse the situation before it's too late. And next time you're faced with the situation, the results will be positive.
Mike Roth with Wolf Olson from Freelance Diving. Wolf, how did you have to come up with that name, Freelance Diving?
That's an interesting question, Mike. The term freelance, if you go back to the days of the Knights of the Round Table, if you will, early medieval Europe, the knights that rode the lances into battle were actually combatants, and when they got knocked off their horse, the ground troops would end up, you know, ending the soldier's life, if you will, the horseman's life. When the battle was won, being one king was killed or battle was won, and it was the final battle of, you know, land acquisition, and the king was killed, the lancers that worked for the king that was killed in battle were given a gentleman's offer of, you can come fight for my army, or we will let you go if you sign a gentleman's agreement not to fight against my troops again. And those that chose not to fight for the conquering king were released on a gentleman's agreement not to fight that king's army again, and they were released to ride around medieval Europe, basically free lancers, mercenaries, if you will, looking for a king to fight for. So the term freelance in and of itself, it can be used, it's used to define somebody that's working basically on their own, freelance photographer, freelance writer, but freelance commercial diving is going wherever they pay us to come to do work. So it's basically mercenary diving. You go where they pay us to go to work.
That's an interesting derivation. I've never heard that before. So in your business, do you have any recurring contracts with clients?
No, certainly.
To be their on-call diving company?
Absolutely. We have paper companies, power plants, lake and pond companies that use us all the time for repairs, construction companies, tow companies. We have a good repertoire with a lot of our clients.
Tow companies? You mean like on the river towing or in
cars?
Cars that go into the water?
Slip off the icy road into the river, Little Miami. One of the shots on our website is a truck that was recovered out of the Little Miami. Tow companies call us in if they can't see it. And I've had tow drivers tell me they pay me to hook up the truck, not to go diving in the ice cold water. That's what we get paid for. So,
Are the suits heated?
I'm sorry?
Are the suits that you guys wear heated?
We have a hot water suit that heats the water inside the suit. You actually wear a small neoprene suit with a larger one over the top of it that has, if you will, IV tubing pumping hot water from the surface down into the water suit around the diver. We also have dry suits and wet suits, and the wet suits are let the water in to warm up the body as it works, mm-hmm. and they're less thermal protective than, say, the dry suit that doesn't let any water in next to your skin. You can actually wear a snowmobile suit or a Carhartt full coverall underneath it, and it keeps you much warmer, drier, longer. The boots are sewn to the suit and sealed to the suit, so the only thing exposed to the water is actually your hands, and that can be sealed up with gloves that lock to the dry suit. So basically you can get to the point where you can, like the sewage treatment plant dives, you basically put the human body in a Ziploc baggie, and he doesn't touch the water and the water doesn't touch him.
Well, that sounds like it's a much better situation for your Class 1 or Class 2 sewage situations.
Absolutely.
Does the hot water suit work well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's much more comfortable for long-term jobs where the diver might spend 4, 5, 6 hours underwater working on a project. You know, it depends on the person's physical ability, how long they can stand the comfort level, if you will. When they start chattering and you know, talking in tongues, we know they're too cold, so we bring them up. But most of the time, the divers let us know when it's getting to the point of being uncomfortable. And we bring them up and rotate the next diver in. So it's an ongoing thing.
So when you go out on a dive job, you'll bring more than one diver?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Minimum required right now by all the safety committees are four.
Four guys?
Four divers.
Who could go into the water,
yes.
Even if it's only going to be a 30-minute job?
Right.
And the client has to pay for all four divers.
Right. It's a standard block bid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have competitors in the field, and we appreciate and love them all to death, but said it is a competition, so
You don't want to be the lowest bidder on every job, but you don't want to be the highest bidder on every job either. So knowing the market value of a commercial dive team is important.
Why wouldn't you want to be the highest priced team and still win the business?
Well, usually what we found in our future, our past, is they'll take the highest and lowest and take the middle.
Mm-hmm.
They'll take the middle bid.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're afraid of the lowest bid.
He doesn't know what he's doing. He underbid the job.
Right. And the highest bid is usually way higher than their budget allows.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them have, you know, maintenance budgets. All the companies, wonderful companies, have maintenance budgets that, you know, if we don't fit into that slot, we can lose it. So
mm-hmm.
knowing what your competitor is, knowing what your market is,
I think
is very
important. I cut you off a little earlier when we were talking about the number of commercial divers who've been killed at work. You said a few fish ate some of them.
Well, it's off North Shore, North Sea, oil fields, currents can be real raging there.
Mm-hmm.
Sharks.
What happens, the lines, these
well,
umbilicals get snapped?
Part or abrade and cut on a piece of rusted steel.
Mm-hmm.
There's one segment on the internet somewhere. I caught it the other night by mistake. A guy wasn't wearing gloves working around sharp rusted steel and ended up cutting the tip of his thumb off. It's all, you know, relative and being safe at what you do, knowing what your hazards are, you know, not wrapping your umbilical around so many things so you don't have to unstitch yourself when it's time to come back up, or in an emergency to climb your umbilical so it's not wrapped around something. Umbilical awareness is what it's called.
Do you ever send two people down on one project?
We can. I've gone down and inspected on scuba. A job that the diver was working on had a problem, and I could tell what he was doing, but I had to go down to show him. And so I just threw on a scuba tank and went down on a tethered line to show him what we needed to be done. So he was okay with that. And it was only like in 12 feet of water.
Yeah, so that wasn't that bad.
No. We can field two divers and an air tool with one of the compressors we have at a depth of probably 60 feet and still have plenty of
air. What do you
mean
by an air tool? The breathing air?
Air hammer.
Air hammer.
You guys see dropping a hole in the streets with the guy bouncing on it.
Yeah.
Air hammer, jackhammer.
You got a jackhammer that works underwater?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have
wrenches.
We have automatic wrenches. We have bolting tools, hammer drills, drills, everything that's valved for underwater. So we can, you know, like I said, pretty much do all the skilled trades underwater.
Mm-hmm. So that's it's a real interesting business. In the last couple of minutes that we have left here, Wolf, is there any advice you want to give anyone who is thinking about hiring a dive company? How to select a dive company?
Look at their resume. Talk to the person in charge of sales, which would be moi. See if they're not pushy, demanding, you know, if they're scary to talk to, if they pay attention to your concerns and answer all your questions in a timely fashion. You know, I don't know it all. I've been around and I've learned a lot through the years, but I don't know it all. You know, if I don't have an answer to a question, I will say, I don't know an answer to your question, sir, but I will find out and get back to you. So listening to your clients, listening to your customers, and come at it from their aspect and treat them like you would want to be treated.
That's fair enough. Wolf, I want to thank you for being on the show with us today, and I'm going to give you a copy of the newest Sandler book. It's called The Sandler Success Principles, actually the 11th Sandler Success Principles. This was released, I believe, in April and immediately jumped to the number one position on Amazon and then jumped up into that position over on the Wall Street Journal list.
Very good. And thank you very much, Mike. Appreciate it.
Yes, I'm going to give you a free pass to one of our Sandler training classes, so you can come in and see how to sell more diving at a higher price will work for you. And naturally, you'll get one of the Mike Roth $1 million bills. Thanks for being with us. And
thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. And tomorrow's show will be John Melvin with the Claremont County Small Business Development Center. Scott, why don't you take it away?
Thanks for listening. If you have questions or comments, contact Mike at Mike Roth, at rothconsulting.net or call Mike at 513-753-9400.